Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
The government and parents everywhere, they tried to ban it.
This is the George Plaster Show.
He's a fine man.
He's a great broadcaster.
Brought to you by Bart Durham Injury Law. Call George now at 615-844-5600 and online at WNSR.com.
He's a very powerful guy.
And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome in on what is a beautiful Wednesday in Nashville, Tennessee. We need to enjoy the good weather while it lasts. 59 degrees, bright sunshine in the Music City. Let's head up to the plateau very quickly and say hello to Coach Watson Brown. Watson, I trust things are good up there as well.
The plateau is great, George. Sun's out up here, too. Not hardly as warm. It's usually 3 to 4 degrees difference, probably. A little breeze. Got to have a jacket, but this is a little better than what we've had the last week or two, so it's good.
Yeah. Okay. Let me say hello very quickly to Portland's finest, Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, who beat out, who am I trying to think, Damian Lillard for Portland's finest.
Oh, there we go. How are you, George?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I see that your boys have signed themselves a pitcher.
Yeah, let's be happy. Yeah, in fact, we'll get to that here in just a second. Let me first bring Chris Lee from VandySports.com to our microphones. Vandy has hired a new chancellor. His name is Daniel Dearmeyer, and he is currently the provost at the University of Chicago. So, Chris, first of all, thank you for coming on really short notice. Do you know much about this guy?
Not a lot. I mean, he's been at USC and I think Northwestern. So although he's at University of Chicago now, which is a place without a football team, he does have some work experience at some places that have had big-time football. And to that, I think he's got a business background in teaching. And I always kind of like to have that from somebody because it helps you to think through a lot of things logically. I think it's always helpful in that regard. So that's what I know about him. Seems like he's very bright and highly regarded. And if you look at his intro video the day they had at Vanderbilt on the website, you get to hear him speak a little bit. He does, well, I don't know if he mentioned athletics in there for sure. I would have to go back and look at that again. But there were several clips of Vanderbilt athletics in that short video, and I have a feeling that is going to be a harbinger of some things to come in terms of his interest in athletics and the fact that it's going to be on the forefront of thoughts for him pretty quickly.
Well, I hope it is. I mean, look, I'd love to tell you that all this academic stuff concerns me, but I think most people know me well enough to know who's kidding who. I brought you on to talk about the sports part of this, obviously. Any other sense of what he is or what he isn't based on anything you've learned early?
Yeah, I can't be too specific here, but I saw that video that I talked about earlier, and that's one of the first things that kind of piqued my interest. And I'll just put it this way. The things that I'm hearing behind the scenes are very consistent with that. I think athletics is going to be something that will be addressed with him pretty quickly. It sounds like there may be more communication and some things like that. So, look, it is very premature to make some predictions on things, and I'm waiting to see what the board will approve in terms of what Malcolm Turner wants for athletics. I think it's not going to be a cheap plan. But I think that the fact that there are signs that the chancellor is at least engaged with the athletics community are positive.
Chris, you were nice to do this on short notice. I appreciate it.
You bet, anytime.
Chris Lee, VandySports.com, joining us to start the show. So, Terry, let's get down to the baseball world because there have been two big signings today. The Braves, as you sort of alluded to, have signed Cole Hamels, 1 year, $18 million, a guy that I had thought they were going after, but I think price range got out of their budget. Atlanta native Zach Wheeler signs a 5-year, $118 million deal with the Phillies. Wheeler, when he's right, can be electric. The problem is he's not always right. And so this is a lot of money. This is a big gamble on the Phillies front, who appear to have more money than God. So, Terry, let's start with Wheeler. What do you think?
Well, like you said, the Phillies certainly don't mind rating their fellow NL East rivals for talent, you know, getting Bryce Harper last year and going after Wheeler this year. So they are trying to upgrade themselves while taking down the other teams in the division a little bit as well. But, you know, I just don't know. You know, I think there's something missing there, and I'm not real sure what it is. And, you know, I think Girardi will get it figured out, but it's going to be interesting to see, you know, because he's a no-nonsense guy, and there's some big egos on that roster.
Now, as for Cole Hamels, 1-year, $18 million. I get the fact that he'll be an innings eater if he's healthy, an upgrade from Julio Teheran. How much of an upgrade? I don't know. When he was good last year, he was really good, and then he got hurt, and obviously when you're hurt, you're not going to be all that good. But, Terry, any thoughts there?
I think it's a good gamble for the Braves because Hamels is a guy, and the Braves certainly lacked this last year, and it's, you saw it in the postseason. They lacked that pitcher that had been there before, that guy that had, you know, won big-time games in the postseason. I think if he's healthy, I think it's a great pickup for Atlanta because I think he can give them that type of guy who has big-time postseason experience, and that can be very beneficial.
Watson, are you now ready for wigwam news?
What is wigwam news?
Just listen closely.
Oh, good.
Wigwam News is sponsored by the leader of the underdog picks. That would be me. So, Watson, here's what I've got for you. I had been told yesterday by a really good source that the Braves were heavily involved right now with Madison Bumgarner. I think the Cole Hamels signing, number one, makes me believe that Madison Bumgarner has priced himself out of Atlanta's market. I think he thinks he's going to get 4 to 5 years, and the Braves aren't going to do that. They are not going to shell out big, you know, near $100 million kind of stuff for Madison Bumgarner. My gut feeling is that this signing today ends that. That's note number one. Do you like wigwam news so far?
Oh, I'm keep me awake, yeah.
Really? So it's that bad, huh?
Go ahead.
Terry, how are you doing with it?
I'm dealing with it, George. It's okay. I mean, you know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not, you know, listening to Susan Waldman with the Yankees.
No, absolutely not.
Roger Clemens is in George's box. Oh, my God. Okay, so the other piece of news appears to be that Josh Donaldson is not coming back. My source believes he's going to sign elsewhere. And if that's the case, then either Austin Riley or Johan Camargo likely to be the starting third baseman. But this particular source does not believe that Josh Donaldson is coming back.
Interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah. That's all.
You know, because, you know, Donaldson had a big year for them. And, he may have priced himself out of the Braves' plans as well.
Watson, what this really does, it puts some real pressure on Austin Riley, who really led their surge in May and early June with a home run barrage, but the league kind of got the book on him, and by August, he really was not a factor at all. And so they have got to, they've got to figure out the strengths and the weaknesses, because the kid has a lot of ability. By the way, he's just south of Memphis is where he grew up, and it looks more and more like they're going to need Austin Riley.
George, you see a lot of these guys go through that, though. I mean, they're hot. The league figures them out a little bit. You got to adjust. I mean, the way I've been told by a lot of the different guys that have played in the league, and that's just part of it. It's cat and mouse. You gotta adjust to what they're doing to you, and a lot of the good hitters do that. They'll come right back through it and figure it out and make them hunt something else to get them out. Why, George, does if the Braves are trying to win it all, why do we price ourselves out of these guys? Why is it the Braves will stop at a certain amount? So, well, we're not going to spend that kind of money, and we still don't win championships. So explain that one to me.
Well, it's two words. It's Liberty Media.
They're going to be cheap and not willing to go that far, right?
Yeah, first of all, they're owned by a group that doesn't give a damn about baseball. They don't know if a baseball's pumped or stuffed. You know, that's the first problem in that kind of a deal. It's not like they've got an Arthur Blank, you know, an Atlanta guy who owns the Falcons, or a Ted Turner in the old days where there was civic pride involved in that thing. Liberty Media is a corporate deal that releases, you know, once a year their profit loss margins, and you know, the guy gets up and tries to act like he knows something about baseball, and he wouldn't know Brian Snitker from Bobby Cox. And so, you know, that's one of the things that has hindered them now for about the last 8 to 10 years, is they have an ownership that's really not very interested. And you could sort of say that has mirrored over the last decade Vanderbilt. You know, they've got an ownership group, if you want to call it that, that really hadn't cared about athletics either and wouldn't know if a football was pumped or stuffed. But the problem is, on the pro sports level, you know, you have to. Now, their claim is that they've gone out early and they've made two or three big splashes in free agency. They've gotten Will Smith. They've gotten a catcher, Travis d'Arnaud, who they desperately needed. Now they've gone out and gotten Josh Hamels. And so their payroll is going to be up significantly. But the concept that they're going to go out as they used to in the old days and go 5 years, $75 to $100 million on free agents, as long as Liberty Media is there, it ain't going to happen.
I mean, the way I look at it is, the money you've put in those guys, I'd throw it all into a Strasburg. I mean, they're one major pitcher. You're going to find a third baseman. I believe that. I mean, probably got one. Austin Riley will play well. I'll bet you he has a good year.
I agree with you.
I bet you he has a good year. We're sitting there floundering over that when one major pitcher, and there's a couple that we know of out there that are better than everybody, and not to even talk to one of those makes me wonder, how bad do you really want to win it? At least pursue them a little bit and talk to them. Am I off my rocker with that thought?
No.
Why wouldn't the Braves? I know it's a small market. I understand that. But still, when you think you've got the team, and I think that and you think that, and we're missing one maybe major piece here, and we go get a so-so pitcher that's been injured and has been around a while, pitched well when he was younger, and spend $18 million, why would you not talk to the big boys first before you go there?
Terry, I think Wigwam, the Wigwam Report has, I think, spiced up considerably since we brought Watson into the fold. I, he brings, yeah. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to argue with him.
Well, yeah, he brings up a good point. It sounds like that there is a little bit of unrest brewing in the wigwam.
Well, okay, Terry, let's be honest, though.
There's a personal statement.
Yeah, but here's...
There's a Yankee man right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he just sits there. They throw out money for Oscar Gamble and Steve Kemp. You all are what caused this ridiculous market. You know that.
Yeah, that's true.
George, so, we play by the rules as they are written. We are not this. We're not some outlaws like the Houston Astros trying to cheat to get an advantage.
Really? Because
really?
If I remember correctly, when Roger Clemens misremembered in front of Congress, he was a member of your New York Yankees, was he not?
Amazingly enough, though, there was nothing to police that back then.
Right, so you got away with it by virtue of a technicality.
It was not illegal at the time.
Yeah, let me ask you one other thing, Terry, as we end the Wigwam Report.
Yes.
Which I think has been just a raging success. When was the last time your team, with all its bankroll and all of its, you know, abilities, when was the last time you had a parade?
2009, some 14 years after.
Wow. Well, I think that's the end of the Wigwam Report. What do y'all think? Okay. Yes, thank you. After the break on what is going to be a good show today, we're going to talk with the head football coach at Austin Peay, Mark Hudspeth. His team has already advanced one round into the playoffs. They are headed to California. We'll talk with Mark after the break. From the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, you're listening to WNSR, Nashville's Tomahawk Radio.
Lynch Tree Service has been helping Middle Tennesseans for more than 25 years. Whether you need tree pruning and maintenance, stump grinding, or even land clearing, Lynch Tree Service is here to help. Their number one priority is to provide customers with the best tree services possible at an extremely competitive price. For more info, give them a call at 615-649-4584 or go online, lynchtreeserve@aol.com.
Looking for future leaders we can trust and believe in? Look no further than the high school student athletes right here in Tennessee. High school sports teach young people how to be effective leaders. It begins by making their grades and being on time for practice. It includes learning to listen, following directions, accepting responsibility, being a good role model. And it's about respect. For officials, opponents, the rules, and each other. The result? It transcends sports. It gives us hope for the future. High school sports. There's so much more than just a game. This message presented by the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association and the Tennessee Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
It's been a great season of college football, and there's no better way to top it off than by securing your tickets to Nashville's holiday tradition, the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. This is your chance to see two of the most exciting programs in the nation square off as the SEC takes on the ACC or Big Ten. The tradition continues at Nissan Stadium on Monday, December 30th at 3 p.m. Buy your tickets early to get the best seats at the best price. Tickets are on sale now at MusicCityBowl.com.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Truck Show.
When you talk about sports radio, it's pure. Okay, it's not sound bites.
Mr. Franks, man, you do it as good as anybody. So I really appreciate, you know, in my time in Nashville, you watched me grow up. You helped me grow. Okay, man, you've provided plenty of conversation, you know, man, for us to talk about all things Vanderbilt. I thank you for that. I truly do.
Weekdays starting at 4 from Nashville's Sports Radio, WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
Call the George Plaster Show now at 844-5600.
Well, one of the things you learn in sports talk radio is that every once in a while you have to shift gears and do something else. We're waiting on a phone call from Austin Peay football coach Mark Hudspeth. As a lot of you know, his team has already won a game in the 1AA playoffs. They ripped Furman to shreds on Saturday, and now they're headed out to California to take on Sacramento State. If and when Mark calls us, we'll get him on. Watson, I want to start with you. I'm going to get to a topic that I was going to bring up later, but this is as good a time as any. I was really surprised yesterday. Paul Feinbaum, on all of the various ESPN shows, had the theme that Nick Saban's best days are behind him. And I think that's a little early to be selling him down the road. And I'm kind of curious what you think.
Well, as I know Paul Feinbaum really well, all he's doing is stirring it up. You say that in the state of Alabama, you will get more attention calls. And I don't believe that whatsoever. I mean, my gracious, it's the first time they've ever been out of the Final Four. Can you imagine that? That's unbelievable to me. And they're just and they lost their starting quarterback. The thing that scares me a little bit about Alabama, George, the last couple of years is their defense. We always want to talk about their offense and blah blah blah, but they haven't played near good a defense recently. And I think he's got to figure that out. I don't see the pass rushers that Clemson's had, and right now Ohio State has. I think he's got to take a look at his secondary. They play an awful lot of press man, and they're getting beat. The corners the other night were beat by Auburn guys that have not been real good all year. They haven't had a great passing game, and yet there were some major critical passes thrown and caught against his secondary. So I think he's got to take a hard look at his defense, but I don't think the Saban era is over till Nick wants it to be over. Now, how much longer he's going to go, that's a good question. I've always said here in the last probably three years, whenever they won their last one, which was what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I think that's right. Since then, I've said he's going to win one more, and that will be it. Nick's 67, and I still think he's hunting that one more. But I don't think they are. I don't agree with that. Now, do I think the SEC's getting tougher? Yes. Florida's going to get better. Tennessee's getting better. Georgia keeps catching him. LSU's gotten a whole lot better. The league, Auburn had still say one of the top two or three defenses in the country this year, and they have a freshman quarterback. That's the thing that I see in the SEC. The SEC is on its way back. The one or two have been really strong, but honestly, George, the SEC hadn't been as strong from middle down.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of years.
I'm totally with you.
And I think that's what I see now starting to come back. Kentucky is coming on. And you've got Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. Who am I missing that are really not on an upswing right this minute?
Vandy.
South Carolina.
I said that. And South Carolina. That was probably the other one. Everybody else you can put an arrow up on right now. And I think the SEC is on its way back in the middle of the conference back. We've had that 1-2 constantly. But I think we've gotten away in the SEC with the best conference. And I'm not sure top to bottom it has been in recent years. And that's because of Tennessee, Florida, those teams that have been strong and all of a sudden haven't been. Now they're working their way back, and I see it. I see them coming.
So, Terry, as Watson pointed out, the common denominator of the last three games that Alabama, the last three big ones, is they couldn't stop Clemson in the national title game if their life depended on it, gave up over 50 in that one, gave up upper 40s to LSU a few weeks ago in Tuscaloosa, and then in Auburn Saturday, a team that really couldn't move the football at all against Georgia for the first three quarters of that game, put a big 48 on Alabama. And so the common denominator is that defensively right now, they're not at a national title level. And in that respect, maybe I understand a little of where Paul Feinbaum's coming, but I think this poking the bear, no pun intended, this is a little early to start the funeral.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting too because, I mean, you know, they obviously every year they lose, you know, five or six defensive players to the NFL, and, you know, they have to keep replacing and replenishing that. And a lot of times you end up playing guys that don't have as much experience or maybe aren't quite as good. But, you know, to me, this falls squarely on Nick Saban because he's the mastermind of the defense. You know, he's sort of like Bill Belichick in that regard. He might have somebody that that has the title of defensive coordinator, but he's the defensive coordinator. And I have a feeling that he will get it fixed at some point. This will not be an ongoing thing because I don't think Nick Saban is accepting of that.
Okay, I'm told that we have Austin Peay football coach Mark Hudspeth on the line with us. Coach, first of all, thank you for taking the time. We've kind of talked a little bit amongst ourselves about what all has gone on for your program in the last 10 days. So kind of tell us, for you, what's this been like?
Well, I tell you, it's been a whirlwind, to say the least, guys, and I really appreciate you guys having us on. But, you know, we got here in January and sort of hit the ground running, and everybody's asked, did you see this coming? You know, did you think you'd have a 10-win season? And first OVC championship in 42 years and first ever playoff appearance. And, you know, I told them this. I didn't know when I first got here because I didn't know the team, didn't know the landscape, learning the players. Well, we go through an incredible offseason where we really develop the culture of our team. And then some teams, you know, they may buy in and may not. But the team really bought into the culture of our team and had a lot to do with developing the culture we have right now. And as we continued progressing through spring football practice, we brought in some transfers that was able to help us right away with the recruiting. Great summer, and we just sort of kept getting better. And now we look up, and we've got a chance to win our 11th game and advance to the quarterfinals of the NCAA playoffs.
Mark, I guess I'm very biased. Will Healy is a darn good friend of mine, and I've thought, okay, whoever comes in there is going to have a hard time early winning over a group that loved him. When do you think you kind of won them over where they said, you know what, this guy's okay, we're with him?
You know, I think that's always a process. You know, we're trying to earn respect. I'm trying to earn their respect. They're trying to earn my respect and the coach's respect, and I think, you know, that always takes a little bit of time. But I think, you know, over time, there's always those moments where they sort of look at you and say, okay, that makes sense. I get that. And then, you know, once they start seeing some reward from the fruits of their labor, then I think they really start trusting you even more. And I'm the first one that gave Coach Healy a lot of credit the other day in the media for the job he had done recruiting because he left some good players. And really it built an incredible foundation here, somehow got left out of the playoffs 2 years ago. And so obviously he has really done a phenomenal job here. And he's a really a strong up-and-coming young coach, and he's got a bright career ahead of him. But our way of doing things are different, which every coach is different, no matter who you are. And that was the biggest thing that you always are worried about, whether the players going to accept the way you do things. And And I really believe that they feel like, one, that we love them. I think our players know we care about them as people first. And I think they know that we're going to work hard, we're going to be disciplined, and we're going to be tough, and we're going to do the right things, and we're going to really hold them to a high standard, not only on the field but off the field. And now that they're seeing that, hey, all those little details and all that hard work is must work because here we are with a chance of winning 11-8.
Mark, were you even caught off guard by the blowout Saturday of Furman?
You know, watching the tape all week, I was, needless to say, I was really concerned. They have a quality football team. Coach Henderson does a great job. That's a well-established program with a deep history of playoff appearances, a national championship. And I really thought that this was going to be, a tough role for our team. I felt like we were definitely going to compete and have a chance to win the game. Don't necessarily know if I saw us, winning the way we did. But we're playing well. We're peaking at the right time. The last 3 weeks we have played about as well as I think as we could play. And we'll need that this week because the ante is going to be much higher going to Sacramento State, who I think they have the number one defense in the country just about.
On the line with us is Austin Peay head football coach Mark Hudspeth. Also on the line with us, because he's part of the show, is a former Austin Peay head football coach, Watson Brown. So, Watson, I got to believe you've paid close attention to all this.
I have, and Mark, congratulations. Of course, I had Mark as an ESPN analyst quite a few times when he was at Lafayette, and Mark, they're doing well now, and a lot of those kids – that they're playing with right now were freshmen and sophomores when I was doing your games, and they were good players even at that point. So congratulations in what you're doing. I got two questions for you real quick.
Okay.
First one is, when I left, I'd been FBS as you for quite a while, and when I came to an FCS school, when I came to Tennessee Tech at the end of my time, when I got with the players in spring ball and summer, the tough thing for me was I didn't know how good we were because it's a different level. Did you go through that process, and when did you realize we can compete in the OVC? Because I remember watching tape, and it's just so hard till you get out there and start playing everybody to really see what you have and what you don't.
Coach, that's amazing that you say that, because I went through that all summer long. I thought we had a really good spring practice, but had never been in this conference and never, at this level. And I really didn't know how good we were. And all I saw was a Jacksonville State team that sort of ran this conference for the last 5 years. And just knew that they had sort of set the bar. And so all spring and all our early morning workouts, I mean, we attribute a lot of our success right now to not what we did on Saturdays last year, but what we did in those wee morning hours, because we worked out a lot in the early morning snow, cold, mat room drills, developing the identity of our team. But I think I didn't really realize that we might have a chance to be pretty competitive until we beat Jacksonville State that day here.
Yeah. And that's the first loss in the conference in a while for them, wasn't it? You were the first to get them.
Well, Southeast had them one time last year, Steve, and then we were the second loss they've had in 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they had just been dominant. And the other thing, Coach, you lost your quarterback early, and then Craig had just come on and been just played lights out. That's a heck of a story in itself.
Yeah, Jeremiah from Brentwood, it just was really having a great camp and a great first game. And he gets hurt second drive against Central Arkansas, and we put Javon in. And, your two is never quite ready because he don't get the reps that the one guy gets. And you always say be prepared like you're going to be the starter, but, that's easier said than done when you're not getting many reps. But he came in, played okay that game, struggled the next week, and then it just sort of clicked for him, and he kept getting better, and the team sort of rallied around him. Luckily, our defense was playing well at the time,
it gave him a little time to sort of get his feet wet, and we got better each week.
And Sacramento State, I mean, it is when we got in it for the first time ever at Tennessee Tech, and we played Central Arkansas in the first game, and it is amazing how much better the competition gets real quick-like. How good is Sacramento State? And you say it might be the best defense in the country. Talk about them just a little bit real quick.
Yeah, when you watch them on tape, and, you know, I was thinking, okay, we got past Furman. Man, we might have a chance to do okay here for a little bit. Then you turn on the tape in Sacramento State and you see their defense, and now I'm back feeling like I did about last March and April. Just don't know what to expect because their defense, they're 11 on defense. It's the best 11 as a group that we've seen this year. They got seven, I think, of their defense starters are all conference. And their four defensive linemen are the best in the conference. And one's an All-American. And as you know, to me, always the best teams in college football or in each conference was always the team that's probably got the best quarterback and the best D-line. They seem to always be the most competitive, and that's what they've got. They've got an unbelievable D-line and overall really good team, but their defense is really good. It's going to be a huge challenge going out there on the road.
Well, congratulations, and Clarksville is lucky to have you. Got a big spot in my heart for Austin Peay. From my, 28 years old when I was there. Go get him.
How about that, though? That's really neat. Well, I know I followed your career for a long time, and that's really neat that I could follow in your footsteps here. This is a neat place. It's a quality of life that is really good for your family. Close to Nurse Food, which we love too. And so we're just excited to be here, and hopefully we can continue building this program.
Terry, what do you got for Coach?
Coach, I got a couple of things. First of all, I want to know, at the FCS level, a lot of times it's a challenge to get the fans and the student body and the community to rally around a team. And it takes success, you know, because you're in the heart of SEC country and that sort of thing. But when you have success like you guys have had, that does seem to bring out the best in the community and the fan support. What have things been like on campus over the last couple of weeks, just with people talking football and Austin Peay football that ordinarily might not have brought that topic up?
You know, that's been the neat thing about it, because when I first got here, I was a little bit surprised about the lack of Austin Peay stuff that I saw around Clarksville. You know, you walk in a restaurant or a bar, a restaurant, you know, sports bar, you don't really see a lot of Austin Peay stuff. And so I thought that was a little weird. But I tell you, the thing, though, that's been pretty neat to see as this season is going along, the fan base, I think, has really been waiting for a while to really come back out, because I think the non-scholarship years really was a setback, obviously, which would be for, you know, any program. And the fans are just sort of waiting, maybe dormant. And now you can see every game the crowds have increased, the community excitement and buzz has increased. And now, to be honest with you, we had some recruits in, and we went out to the next couple places, and now I walk in and there was three helmets sitting up on the top of the bar at the sports bar, framed jerseys, people waving their flags outside their house, bumper car tags with Austin Peay on it. You know, you're just starting to see the Austin Peay stamp here in Clarksville, and that's really what we want to do. And so that part's been really fun. And as we can see this program build some excitement within the community, and as we start to get some national exposure now.
One of the things, too, that I noticed, I took a quick glance at your roster, and there are an overwhelming number of kids on this roster who are in-state kids, who are from the state of Tennessee, you know, Brentwood, Nashville, Murfreesboro, right there in Clarksville, Hendersonville. I've seen, hometowns of, you know, players that people obviously would recognize because they're local. How important is it to you to keep that local recruiting base going and having a real strong in-state presence as you build this program?
Well, I think that's important. And that's always been important everywhere I've went. We're always going to start inside out and always work inside out. We never want to have to fly or drive past a really great player when we've got one right here. And then obviously you always want to sign the best players and you always are trying to upgrade at each position. And if there's a player that we feel like can help us win a championship, then we don't want to just look past somebody because they're close by. We love the local kids. To me, the in-state kids are going to take a lot of pride in their state, a lot of pride in their program. And to me, we'll always begin and work inside out. And but there's a great recruiting. We're a great recruiting base in, here in the Southeast. And the SEC schools can't sign them all. And some of the ones they sign end up coming back to us in a year or two anyway. So it's a great opportunity to pick up some good players.
Mark, thank you for taking the time. I know you've had a lot of requests over the last week. There are a lot of people in our listening area very proud of what you all are accomplishing. Good luck Saturday, and let's do this again soon.
Hey, guys, man, I really appreciate you guys having us on. Y'all have a great day. Y'all come see us. Go Govs.
Take care. Good luck. It's a cool story because in recent years, until Will Healy got there, Austin Peay football had not had a lot of success. So good for them. Good for Mark Hudspeth. Good for those players. Good for the Clarksville community. We'll go to the break at 2:44. And then I'm going to throw out some college football questions that I want to see where these guys go with it. I think you'll enjoy it. Stick around. You're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
My buddy James Warren is with me in studio, class of 1977, Battleground Academy. He's the owner of Sir Speedy Music City. The name has changed, but let me tell you one thing that hasn't. They do great signage. If you don't believe them, go in and try it, right?
Absolutely, George. We love doing signage. That's a big part of our business. And if it has to do with trade show displays, banners, posters, directional signs, big signs on the side of your business, window decals, graphics, you see us all over town and we love it.
Well, the bottom line is you want your company to look good. Now give people phone number, website, that kind of stuff.
You can reach us at 615-832-9511. SirSpeedyMusicCity.com is our website. Print at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com gets you to it.
Bottom line is you want your company to look good. When you go in, tell them Plaz sent you.
Okay, let's say your business does $5,000, $20,000, $100,000 or more in monthly revenue. There are probably times when you need more cash flow to run your business, right? Right. If you're a business owner in this situation, you need to call the Merchant Cash Advance Line right now. We're not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We're a direct lender with the power to approve deals. We look at your business and we decide how much money to lend you, good credit or bad credit. If your business is solid, we can lend you up to $500,000. You can use the money for anything you think is right to run your business. If you need money and you don't want to deal with a bank, call now. Learn how easy it is to get up to $500,000 in as little as 2 to 3 days.
Call now. 800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. That's 800-452-4846.
I want you to listen really close to a message from the folks at ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kaloudis. Your credit reports are your financial report card. A good credit report is necessary to get a mortgage, car loan, and credit cards. Even getting rental housing insurance or a job is dependent on your credit report. Here's what blows me away. 40 million consumers have an error on their credit report, and 2 million of those are so serious they're likely being overcharged for mortgages, credit card debts, auto loans, insurance policies, and other financial obligations. If you want to know more about your credit report, I want you to contact Bill Kaloudis at ShieldLawGroup.com or call Bill at 615-742-8020. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kaloudis.
Holiday traditions are alive and well inside every Home Depot. And right now, outside as well, with a lot full of fresh-cut Christmas trees of every size and shape. Come walk the lot, pick one out, and save. Or if you can't make it outside, order online and we'll deliver one right to your door for free. fresh-cut Christmas trees, in-store, or with free online delivery, only from the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Selection and prices vary by store. See store for details.
The man, the myth, the legend, the Plaz. The George Plaster Show on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
Okay, here we go with some good college football discussion. Watson Brown, Terry McCormick alongside. Hope you're enjoying a beautiful Wednesday afternoon in Nashville. Okay, let's start with this one. Terry, is yes. Ohio State in the college football playoff even if they lose to Wisconsin?
Depends on what happens with LSU and Georgia. If Georgia wins, then they might be out because I think LSU would get an at-large berth, and then they might look to either Utah or the Oklahoma-Baylor winner. So I think because I'm not real sold on Wisconsin as a great team, I think there's still a scenario where Ohio State gets in with one loss, but I don't think it's a sure thing.
Watson, let's have you take the same question. Is Ohio State in – win or lose Saturday?
I don't think you can just say that. I think it's all the scenarios. If Georgia wins, I think LSU's in over Ohio State because LSU lost to a higher opponent, the fourth place team right now, whereas Wisconsin's on down. And then I think it also depends on I think Ohio State would get in over Baylor. If Baylor beat Oklahoma and Oregon beat Utah, I think they would get in over Baylor. But if Oklahoma or Utah win, that's the one I'm not sure about. It's those two. But if Georgia beats LSU, that's a tough one. I really believe if Utah dominates Oregon, they may pass them all. And if they don't and it's a close game and Oklahoma wins, I think Oklahoma passes Utah. So those games right there, that 4-5-6 is really going to be special to me. I don't see Georgia beating LSU. And so then if Ohio State were to lose, now I'm not too sure they wouldn't be the team right there if that happens.
Okay, Terry, let's go with this question. Is LSU in win or lose?
Yes, unless they get beat 31-7, yes.
Okay. Watson, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
So LSU has more
security. To discuss that, but.
LSU has more security, according to you guys, than Ohio State does.
The reason I say it is who they're playing. They're playing right now the fourth seed. And if you lose in a close game to the fourth seed, whereas Wisconsin's way on down the list, I think that's what would hurt Ohio State.
Okay, now let's go to the third question here, Terry. I think all of us deep down believe that if Clemson loses to Virginia, that they are out. They will not be given any consideration based on the pathetic state of the ACC right now. But is it possible today that Clemson is the best team in college football and getting absolutely no credit for it?
Sure, they're the defending national champions. So, and, you know, they still have the main piece of that team back in Trevor Lawrence. I think they definitely could make a case that they're the best team, but they're going to have to show it in the playoff. They're not going to get the respect right now because, as you said, the ACC is really down this year. I think there's Virginia, obviously the second best team, and they've got three losses.
Watson, you take that same one.
Yeah, well, I would say it, George, is that's the bunch I wouldn't want to play. So that tells me, in my mind, I think they're as good as anybody. But the, their mindset because of the way Dabo has gone about this. I loved his rant after they beat South Carolina. That was a Nick Saban rant. That was a setup. That was all for his team. That's all that was. And he's setting it up. He's wanted to play this underdog role ever since he's been in these playoffs. He always loves to go that route. If you go back and look at his quotes in the national championship year, he was always, we're the ones that everybody leaves, we're not very good. And he's doing exactly what he's done. And what a great setup for him, George, because if the league had been better, everybody would have been talking about how good they are, and the pressure would have been on them. But the way it's gone, especially after North Carolina played them close, and North Carolina 6-6, you know, so, but honestly now, guys, that's the only close game, really, all year. And you go back and look at the great teams when they won the national championship, they had one game like that in those seasons the same way. Now, the difference, I think, is the ACC this year is probably the weakest it's been, George, in what, 5-10 years?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's got to be. I can't ever remember it being this weak. But, yes, I would not want to mess with Clemson. My deal wouldn't be to be number one or number four. Just keep me out of the semifinals against Clemson. That's the team I would not want to play.
Okay, Terry, let's start this one with you.
Okay.
Scenario of LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson all win over the weekend. Who's number one?
I think LSU would leapfrog Ohio State because they would, as Watson pointed out, they would have beaten the team that was ranked number four. I think LSU could be the one, Ohio State the two, and Clemson the three.
Watson?
Yeah, I think that's it. And again, everybody wants the one to stay away from the 2-3, which is going to catch Clemson, in my opinion. And the 4 right now, if they went out the way it should happen, by whose favor, George, the 4th team is going to be who? Utah or Oklahoma, correct?
Yes.
Maybe Baylor.
That's,
maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Utah or Oklahoma. And I don't think either one of those are near as good as the 3 in front of them. So everybody wants the 1 to catch the 4 and to stay away from Clemson. That's the thoughts on all these campuses right now.
Right.
In my opinion. That's the thought in Ohio State and LSU's camp, I can promise you right now.
So let me toss a scenario out. And, Terry, I want to start with you on this. Let's just make up some pairings here, and let's say that Clemson and Ohio State end up playing in Atlanta, and then you have LSU against Utah. Now, you and I both know that the network, in this case ESPN, is dying not to have Utah. They would love a bigger, sexier name. Thus, an Oklahoma that I don't think deserves this is getting a lot of play. So ultimately, when they get in that committee room, even though they tell us, oh, we absolutely don't think this way, do you think Utah gets screwed over because they're not the sexy name?
I don't think so. But I think they have to be impressive against Oregon. I don't think they can, you know, have some ugly-looking, you know, 14-13 type of game and impress the committee, especially if Oklahoma runs all over Baylor and wins, say, 45-20. But, I do think that Utah probably has the inside track, but they've got to win and win a little bit convincingly against an Oregon team that I think really has underachieved this year.
Watson, what's your answer to that? Is Utah obviously not the sexy name that Oklahoma is? Do you think the committee at all screws over Utah with that in mind?
Absolutely not. I don't think that's even discussed in there. Maybe I'm one of these rose-colored glasses guys, George, but I just don't believe that. I think they're truly in there. I know if I was in that committee, it'd be, who's the best team? That's our job. Let's put the best team out here. I don't think they're going to listen to the outside stuff from ESPN, or I just don't believe that. I think they're going to put the best one, and I still think the best one, if Utah wins a close game and Oklahoma wins a close game, does that plan a, what is Baylor right now, 9 guys? Am I right about that, or 8? What are they, 9?
I don't have it in front of me. A lot of going on here.
Yeah, I think they're right in there. And then Oregon's 12, 13, somewhere in there, right? And I'm just not sure that wouldn't be enough to put Oklahoma past Utah. Is they just played a higher-ranked team. And, this time I got a feeling the game's not going to be close if Oklahoma wins. It'll be close if Baylor wins. But I think if Oklahoma wins, it could be a 2-7, 2-touchdown, 17-point game.
Baylor is the 7, Oklahoma is 6, Utah is 5th.
And what's Oregon?
Oregon? Oh, they're way down the list.
That's the George, why I think that's why Oklahoma could pass Utah.
Yeah. Hour number one is in the books. When we come back, the executive director of the Music City Bowl, Scott Ramsey, will join us, and we'll ask him the question, is an SEC team going to play here in Nashville?